going to tell you a story, a Minnesota story, about the Minnesota Immunization Networking Initiative. This is a wonderful story of a public-private partnership. It's a true cross-sector collaborative that includes a large hospital system, a small private for-profit healthcare company, the Minnesota Department of Health, pharmaceutical companies, corporations, and faith-based and community-based organizations. The purpose of the MINI project, as we call it, we had to give it an acronym because it was too long, so we called it MINI. MINI project is to increase influenza immunization rates among minority and underserved populations in the greater Twin Cities by utilizing the resources and trust of faith-based and grassroots community organizations. And our goal was to also embed a community-based framework for pandemic response. Now, we did this in baby steps, and I'm showing you this. If you can look way down at the bottom, the print is a little bit small. But it says, would you come back to this site for other shots or health information? We would ask people that in addition to finding out what the ethnicity was, what their age range was, if they'd had a flu shot before, and then if they would come back there. We've also paired that with some conferences and seminars on helping faith community leaders understand what they could do for pandemic preparedness. So it's a baby step, but we're starting. Why is it important that we were doing this? Well, there was a need, for one thing, and the Fairview Health Services that I work for says that their goal is to improve the health of the communities that we serve. Also, within Minnesota, Minnesota is one of the healthiest nations in the United States. But if you look at the minority populations, we don't look quite as good. So there is a case for health disparities within the state of Minnesota. And a lot of the statistics aren't available for us to look at when we look at minority populations. But here's just one example. Pneumococcal, the white population is probably 70% have had that shot, where 22.5% of African Americans have had it. We also know that immunization coverage rates are one of the strongest leading health indicators as to how people are doing. Why the MINI project? Well, there's an infrastructure missing, particularly for adults. Children have that VFC program, and in Minnesota, it's no shots, no school, but adults don't have the same benefits of that. So we used an existing infrastructure of the faith communities. Why was this important? Because there's a lot of barriers. Cost is one of the biggest things. People don't have insurance. We also know that there's mistrust of the medical profession. We found this to be particularly true with our African American populations. There's a fear of government with some, particularly with Latino populations. It could be that there were families that were here legally, but they had a relative who was not. And so they weren't about to go to a public health place or the government to get their shots. I put down at the bottom the transportation and appointments in smaller letters because those were smaller barriers. But there are some perceived barriers to this. One is that people in minority populations typically have poor interactions with healthcare providers if they have a medical home. And also, we ran into all kinds of reasons that people didn't need a flu shot. They didn't need it. Flu shots make you sick. That would be one thing. And it doesn't work. And when we were in the faith communities, we ran into a lot of people saying, the Lord takes care of me. We had some wonderful partners in our faith-based and community groups. One group particularly reached out to Somali population, American Indian, Latino, and African American. The way that we did it is that we let the local trusted organizations, so-called, call the meeting and host the clinic. It wouldn't have probably worked if the Minnesota Department of Health or Fairview Health Services or any other big organization just said, we're going to have a flu shot clinic and we want you to come. Well, when it's called by a trusted entity within the population where people are gathered, they come. This is Guardian Angels Church in Chaska, Minnesota. and they're filling out their forms. Here are the other principles that were in play for the mini project: that the immunizations would be given at no cost, that no one would be turned away, the evidence of need does not have to be presented, and that all people would sign a consent form and be given a copy of the HIPAA agreement and the influenza fact sheets from the CDC. Here's a copy of a flyer that we used for some of the Latino churches. Why did it work? Well, we leveraged the trust that was inherent within these community and faith-based organizations. They are trusted entities. They've been known to be safe places. And the faith-based leaders are trusted messengers. If the pastor, the priest, the imam, or the rabbi stands up and says, "We're hosting a flu shot clinic, and I'm going to get my shot today," people come. And they in most cases, the faith-based communities and the community organizations already are delivering some type of service to the larger population, and so that trust is already in place. Here's the results from this season. For the 07-08 season, we've served 4,149, and there is a flu shot clinic today with the Somali population back in Minnesota. The figures that you see below that are from last season, because we are still doing a few clinics, and we will compile that at the end of this season. 50% of the people who came last year, we did 5,000 shots in the last season. 50% of those were first-time persons. 30% were adults 18 and older. 40% were adolescents 9 through 18. And 30% were under that age of 9. We did, although we were in non-traditional settings, one of the things that we worked very hard at was to make sure that we followed the standards that were set by the National Vaccine Advisory Committee. And we were able to do all seven except for a portion of one, which is that we could not consult medical records and we could not send the results of the shots to medical records, because most of these people did not have a medical home. So here are the seven quality standards: information and education, information that's culturally and linguistically appropriately written. We had them translated into Spanish, into a Somali dialect, and we're working this year to have one for the Karen population, which is from Burma. There's a large population of those people in Minnesota right now. Vaccine storage and handling is another standard, that how we store the vaccine is important. The vaccine comes to our non-traditional sites in small portable coolers, each one with a calibrated thermometer, and we record the temperature of what's going on in that cooler on an hourly basis. We obtain immunization history as much as we possibly can. This is where the interpreters are very important. Every nurse has an interpreter right at her elbow, because a lot of times people just need to have someone ask them in their own language what type of medical history that they've had. We also look for contraindications. We ask about egg allergies. We also ask if persons are pregnant. We ask if they live with someone who has cancer or receiving cancer treatment. And then we do some really good record keeping. Again, we cannot consult their medical record, and we don't send this to their primary care provider. But we do give them a card if it's a child who's receiving their very first immunization. We give the parent a card saying that they need to have that shot 4 weeks later, and then we give them a copy of the other free clinics so that they can go there. This is taking place in a Somali mall. Photo here. As far as vaccine administration, all of the shots are delivered by registered nurses, and in a couple of cases we've had some nursing students, but they've been supervised by licensed registered nurses. Adverse events, we have nurses that are ready for that. They all have Epi with them. We also have a cell phone for emergencies, and we have persons who are receiving their very first flu shot wait for 30 minutes. replication model would include someone that could be the what I call the intermediary organizer. As it turns out, that happened to be me, working for Fairview Health Services. But what we had to do is that we had to find the funding for this project, or we had to find donations for the project, and then we had to leverage the existing networks. I didn't go out and create them all, because I had been in partnership with many of the places that helped deliver the flu shots previous to this. But then I worked with them, for instance, the St. Mary's Clinics, which organized the Latino population shots, mostly through Catholic churches. We secured the sites, and then that partner made sure that we had publicity and that kind of thing. We also, this intermediary organizer needs to find the funding, find the resources, find the infrastructure that's located in the community, and then support the delivery needs with any items that are needed. So you need a project director that can help with the funding. And we also worked with this small private healthcare company that had the doctor's orders. And we had healthcare professionals that were registered nurses. Of course, they brought the vaccine, the syringes, the supplies, and the paperwork. And then we had the community partners that helped with site selection, coordination, publicity, and interpreters. Here are the lessons that we learned. The relationships are key. The relationships between the organizer and between the community leaders, whether it's a faith community leader or community leader in general, to call the meeting. The trust is the coin of the realm. That's the thing that we leveraged and we built on. Providing the immunizations at no cost was a huge incentive. Many of the people came to us because they simply could not afford to go to the drugstore or the grocery store and pay even what was a reduced rate of $14 per shot. We found that last year was our first year, last season was our first year, this season is the second. The numbers have increased each year. Last year we did 5,000, but as you probably have heard in other workshops, in other presentations, last year Minnesota had 6 pediatric deaths. And those happened kind of late in the season. And so what happened in February is that we ended up doing 1,000 shots in February. And we didn't do that many this year. But by the end of January, we had done more this year than last. So I think that we're off to a good start. There's an inverse correlation between when the vaccine will be donated, possibly, and when people want the shots. It's really good because they have been paying attention. They know that they probably should come and get that shot in the fall, but we don't have the vaccine necessarily available at that time. Just show you a couple little shots. Here's this was actually a clinic that was organized by a group of Hindus. And there are the Hindu ladies who provided refreshments for the clinic. This was a volunteer at one of our Latino settings, and she was taking care of a little one while the mom was getting her shot. I've had wonderful support in Minnesota from my employer, which is Fairview, particularly from Sanofi, who donated a vaccine, from Homeland Health Specialists, CVS Pharmacy. We wrote a grant and got some money there. But I would be remiss without recognizing my friends from Minnesota Department of Health. Cheryl and Jill are back there, and also Diane Peterson from Immunization Action Coalition. It's been a wonderful experience and a true partnership. So thank you very much. Any questions?